You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Welcome. My name is Anthony Richter. I'm Associate Director of the Open Society Institute. And I'd like to welcome you to this evening's event and conversation with Fazlia Abed, the founder and chair of BRAC, and his colleagues, Dr. Alan Rosenfield, the chair of BRAC, and Susan Davis, the president and CEO of BRAC USA. And this event is proudly co-sponsored by the Asia Society. We'd like to thank them, Suzanne DiMaggio, for their partnership in sponsoring this. My job has become immensely easier because George Soros has rearranged his schedule to be here in person to introduce Fazlia Abed. So I'm going to just do the most perfunctory of chores and then hand over to George Soros. For your information, this event is being recorded for subsequent broadcast on our website. And actually, I think we have our Washington office by video conference. Hello. Also, very high-tech and low-carbon event and a reaching of a far broader audience than even the many people who will be here physically. A note to the panelists. Please speak loudly and clearly into the microphones at all times. That will help with the quality of the recording. The audience members, when the time comes for your participation, please use the microphone during the question and answer period. And now I have to read you something that was crafted by our legal department. You'll see. Please be advised that OSI may be recording this event and your presence and participation for possible subsequent distribution. Your continued presence following this notice constitutes your legal permission to OSI to do so, as stated on the placard posted at this podium and or on the walls of this room. And that's the end of me. Now, George Soros.
Well, we first came into contact with BRAC, I think, in connection with the Stop TB campaign, where we found that actually BRAC represented a really outstanding example of how to engage civil society in public health issues. And I was very much impressed by it and visited Bangladesh last Christmas, and I had the pleasure of being taken around by Dr. Abed to some of the villages and seeing their work on the ground. So it is really a great pleasure for me to introduce him. I think that, you know, generally speaking, all foundations and do-gooding organizations think that they really know how to do it best. But I think in this case I'd make an exception, and I think BRAC is doing a pretty good job. So it will be a very interesting for all of us to hear how you are doing it and what you are doing. And I just before I hand over to you, I just again want to mention that BRAC now has established a BRAC USA, and the chair is Dr. Alan Rosenfeld, who's also the dean of the Columbia School of Public Health, and Susan Davis is the chief executive officer. So they'll be also available for questions and answers. So with that, the floor is yours.
Thank you, ladies, very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being here this evening. It's a great pleasure to be here and to be with friends. I see a number of people I've already seen in a number of my talks. But anyway, so what my talk presentation today will be in two parts. One is a 10-minute video on sights and sounds of Bangladesh and BRAC. And then I'll speak for about another 15 minutes. And then we'll go for question and answers. So the video, please.
That wasn't where we planned to stop, but I think we'll stop there. Please welcome back Fazil Ahmed.
This has given you some idea of what BRAC does. Of course, we haven't covered health program at all. We're just starting health. But anyway, I think to give you some idea on microfinance that we do, you have heard that we have got different microfinance windows for different groups of people. Poorest from poor people having access to $150 average loan size to BRAC also provides up to $6,000-$7,000. There are three groups that get microfinance. We have a research and evaluation department in BRAC. We've had it for last 20 years, from 1975 onwards. We found that there are 10%, the poorest 10% of Bangladesh's population doesn't have access to microfinance because either the village people themselves don't believe that they can borrow and repay, or they themselves don't have the ability or think that they can borrow and repay, and they will consume most of it. So in 2001, we decided to take the poorest 10% of Bangladesh's population and provide them access to resources so that they could ultimately graduate to a level where they could take financial services from us. So in other words, they could become normal poor in order to access financial services. So what are these poorest 10% of Bangladesh's population? These are usually women-headed households with no male life earner, with two or three children, with no ostensible means of survival. These are the poorest 10% of the household. They tend to be women-headed households. And so, can microfinance help them? We found that microfinance is not the most appropriate intervention for them. What has to be done is one has to really give resources, assets to them in order to be able to earn something, probably provide also a stipend for survival, and also link them to their own communities because they tend to be marginalized within their own community. They are the poorest of the poor, nobody cares about them. So we took up a program for 100,000, a population of 100,000 families, and which cost us about $58 million, donor funded, to provide them with asset transfer, we call them, maybe a cow. Instead of giving a loan, we gave them a cow or six goats, or gave them a piece of land where they could do horticulture or vegetable gardening so that they could earn something. So an earning asset was the first task that we did, transfer. Second thing we did was we got all their children into school. Those who were in the school age, we send them to school. We also provided healthcare support. If they were ill, they could go to a doctor free of charge, and we would provide for medicines. And then what we did is, in the village itself, get a group of people who are well off, particularly businessmen, even teachers, and so on. And we formed a support group for the ultra poor, so that if their car was stolen by somebody, they could go to them and get a redress of any complaints that they have. So that's what we did. So two support system, health and education, and provide an asset. And the idea was that if we did that for 2 years, they will graduate out of extreme poverty and then become, with the normal microfinance groups, they could then borrow and repay and then grow the ladder. So we did that for 5 years, and 96% of them graduated out of extreme poverty and they joined our normal microfinance program. So this year, last year, 2007, we had the second phase started with 800,000 families to get out of poverty. So we wanted $180 million, which we have now got or committed, so we can do that. Our estimate is that something like about two and a half million to 3 million families are probably in that range of extreme poverty who cannot benefit from microfinance alone. So we are doing that. The cost per family to graduate them out of extreme poverty into tolerable poverty, or who can graduate out of poverty, is around $300. And most donors find it not too expensive to get a family out of extreme poverty. And but that type of poverty, what happens is these are chronic poverty. Their children are going to be poor too. If they don't go to school, they will be malnourished. They will again be extremely poor. And so we didn't want reproduction of poverty in our society. So that's the idea, is to focus our attention to extreme poverty. So that's one program we are doing now. In health, our program is, in the 70s, we did a program to cut down infant and child mortality in Bangladesh. So we went to all the 13 million households in Bangladesh to teach one woman in every household how to make oral rehydration therapy at home and how to administer it. And that had a big impact on diarrheal mortality reduction. We also then took up immunization of children, and we covered the entire country again. The government took half the country and we took the other half, and we covered with everybody with immunization. We covered around 80% of the households. And that had a big impact on infant and child mortality reduction. In the 79, when it was the International Year of the Child, the infant mortality rate was 135 per thousand, which has now dropped down to 58. And under 5 mortality used to be 252. It has now come down to 78. So when we are hoping that this is going to go down further as we improve our delivery of immunization services in the community. And what has happened also, what we see in our society, I've been working at it for the last 35 years, so I can see some trends. Over the years, in 1975, Bangladeshi women used to produce about 6.2 children per family, per woman. Now it has come down to 2.8. So a demographic transition is ongoing in Bangladesh. Mortality has declined, fertility has declined in tandem with that. And you will see that most societies will behave exactly the same way Bangladesh has behaved. Your society has done the same before, maybe 60 years earlier, and we have been 60 years later. And the same kind of things will happen in Africa also. It hasn't started yet. We haven't been able to do mortality reduction in Africa yet in a substantial number. And fertility still remains high. But talking about Bangladesh, we have worked on microfinance. As most people know, the microfinance is financial services, savings credit. But BRAC hasn't been content just giving money to people. We wanted them to earn an income which is going to take them out of poverty. So we looked at, by giving money, we were not content. We tried to look at how we could improve their livelihood, income levels. So we, wherever we found that there was problem in either marketing a product, I found in the north of Bangladesh, when I visited that area, I found quite a few women who couldn't market their milk because they bought cows with our loan, but there was no buyer of milk in that area, or its village is too poor to buy milk. So therefore, one had to go into collection of milk from the areas where there was no market and bring them to Dhaka or the capital city, pasteurize them, process them, and then sell them as product demanded by the city people. So we have gone into business, dairy business, to collect milk and to provide the right kind of prices to our cow rearers. Similar kind of way, we found, for example, that there is no... So if the women gone... We have got about 300,000 women who do vegetable gardening. But vegetable gardening, you need high quality seeds. If the quality of seed is not very good, the crop is not going to be good. So BRAC has gone into business in seed multiplication, seed production. And so high quality seeds are now available so that they can get a much better output out of these seeds. Similar way, we have gone into poultry. The normal poultry used to give 60 eggs a year. We've gone into hybrid poultry, and the poultry breed, new breed, produces 280 eggs a year. So their production has gone up. And we have tried to solve problems of rural income and employment problem. In 1990, we decided that if we could plant mulberry trees, we could get a lot of women involved in silk worm rearing, so silk production. So we planted 25 million mulberry trees in 13,000 kilometers of roadside verges so that we could give women opportunity to take leaves from these trees and get into silk worm rearing and spinning and weaving and so on. So like that, so we looked at how we could improve livelihood of people. As we have looked at health, we have looked at livelihood, we have looked at education, we saw that Bangladesh has got 19 million children in the age group of 6 and 10, but only 15 million are now going to government schools. So we had to set up a whole new school system to take on 1.5 million children in our schools, which we provide education completely free. And these are, what are these children? These are children from the poorest families, and also these are children who tend to be girls. The girls' education is not considered by many parents to be very important, so therefore they would send their boys to school, but not the girls. But because of BRAC's work now, we take girls. What is happening is that Bangladesh, in primary schools in Bangladesh, it's almost girls and boys are in parity because we have promoted girls' education in Bangladesh. And so, but then, is primary education a field where an NGO should be? We consider that as long as there is a demand in this country and the government is not able to meet these needs, you need to be active and provide education. Because once a child becomes older, it's difficult to then provide an education. So while they're children, we need to provide them an education. So we are providing education to 1.5 million children, but there are still 2 million children left. Maybe if we had more money, we would have set up more schools and provide all children an opportunity for basic education in our society. Now, so BRAC has been fairly successful in getting into rural Bangladesh, organizing poor people for power, getting them into income and employment generation, providing their children education, providing basic health care, family planning, reproductive health, antenatal care, to cut down maternal and child mortality and morbidity. And we have also been active in providing legal services to people, particularly poor women. So this success, we are not quite content. We are still deepening our program. And we are, our budget is now almost $425 million. Only about a quarter of it comes from donors. The rest of it comes from businesses that BRAC does. So we are not totally donor dependent. We are a kind of a NGO, which is a very different kind of NGO, which is doing business, which is doing non-profit work, but it's an organization which is completely non-profit. Even the business profit comes into it, into our development programs. We have developed banks. We've got a BRAC bank. So where BRAC leaves off in terms of microfinance, BRAC bank takes over. So small and medium enterprises are funded by BRAC bank. So this year, BRAC is going to give out $900 million to poor people. And BRAC Bank is going to give out $300 million to small enterprises. And hopefully, ultimately, BRAC Bank will become bigger and provide more to small and medium enterprises to create jobs in our society. We have also set up an university, which is doing undergraduate training and also postgraduate training in public health, in education, in governance and development, and also in business. So we are looking at many different needs of our societies and trying to meet them through different types of programs. Now in 2002, Afghanistan suddenly became independent, got rid of the Taliban. And we thought, my God, these 3 million refugees are going to flock into from Pakistan and Iran. And we had the similar kind of experience when Bangladesh became independent, when 10 million refugees started coming back to Bangladesh. So we could probably do something about the Afghan problem. So we went into Afghanistan and we started working in microfinance, in healthcare, in education, similar kind of things that we do in Bangladesh. And we found that poor people, almost in any other culture also, have the same aspirations, same goals, same needs. So with minor adaptation in program implementation, Afghan program is just as successful as it is in Bangladesh. So Afghanistan, we have got nearly 5,000 staff, Bangladeshis as well as mostly Afghans, but few Bangladeshis. And then in response to tsunami, Asian tsunami, in 2004-05, we went to Sri Lanka. And then a year ago, we branched out into Africa, in Tanzania, Uganda, and Southern Sudan. So we've just started there about a year ago. And I think many of the lessons learned over the 35 years in Bangladesh is also being replicated in Africa. And we are finding that they tend to work quite well in African situation also. And how does an organization which is essentially a southern organization, BRAC, which comes from a poor country, how does it become a global NGO? So we needed to fund these programs in Africa and other parts of Asia. We needed a BRAC in the north. So we have set up BRAC USA so that some of you can get connected, provide advise and counsel, raise funds for good programs in Africa, and also we have set up a BRAC UK. And hopefully that these two organizations will help BRAC to become a global entity in terms of poverty alleviation in Africa and Asia. So that's what our goals are, and I hope that this will happen. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. BRAC, there's someone who's worked in global health for now over 40 years. I can say without question, BRAC is the most impressive NGO anywhere in the developing world with a remarkable record, as Mr. Abbott has described to you. His approach to girls' education has been dramatic. And it is interesting, in Bangladesh today, there are more girls in high school than boys. And in a Muslim country, that's a remarkable record. And I think BRAC is the cause. Their work on microcredit loans that he described is remarkable. There, when oral rehydration became a key issue for children's health, they put in place the largest national effort on oral rehydration of any country. Their family planning program is exceptional, and all the other things that Mr. Abbott has described. When he started to move out of Bangladesh into first Afghanistan and Sri Lanka, then decided to go to Africa, and he wanted to set up an organization here in the U.S., I was honored to be able to be part of that, to try to chair a board to help raise funds for his work in Africa. And we're delighted that Susan Davis has become our president and CEO and has been doing a lot of great work for BRAC USA. And any of you interested in learning more about it, we'd be happy to tell you about it. There are some brochures that maybe you all picked up about BRAC, but there's no organization quite like it, and working and supporting them is really wonderful. They are so efficient that I'm going to set up a Columbia School of Public Health, Mayo School of Public Health, BRAC organization, so BRAC can raise money for me too. No, I'm joking, but it is truly a remarkable organization. Anybody who wants to help, please be in touch with us, because we are trying to be as supportive as we possibly can to an extraordinary man and his organization. He and I were fortunate to have first met in 1971 or 72 when Bangladesh first became independent, when he was just getting ready to set up his organization. As I watched it grow over the years, I was truly amazed by what he was able to accomplish with his Bangladesh colleagues. So, any questions you have for him or us, please feel free to ask them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alan. It's remarkable that you have chosen to use your time and energy on yet one more organization, and that's BRAC USA. I'm Susan Davis, and my job's really to open up the floor to discussion, questions, challenges, stories. We're told by Anthony that everybody has to use the microphone so that you'll be recorded, and folks in D.C., if they're still around, get to see and hear. Please come on up and line up at the mic if people want to start off. I know that it's always tough to be the first one, but maybe I could just ask, how many people here have actually been to Bangladesh or lived in Bangladesh or from Bangladesh? Show of hands? Yeah?
Ooh, I don't remember.
It's not bad. There's a... I was there 20 years ago. I left the World Trade Center, went to work in Bangladesh, and the discovery, there wasn't a BRAC University yet, but I in fact apprenticed at the BRAC University, I guess, with the understudies of a great social entrepreneur like Fazal Abled, and also Dr. Yunus there and others, and I realized Bangladesh is the Wall Street of development, right? Those of you who have been there know that. Those of you who haven't been yet, please go there because it's incredible. All the problems and all the solutions are there. Such an interesting and rich development engine with so much innovation and entrepreneurship in spite of bad governance. So the World Bank says Bangladesh is an outlier. We can't explain why they're on track to achieve the Millennium Development Goals. Well, there's a reason why I think they're on track. Please, don't be shy. Somebody's going to get up. Huh? Stephen, welcome.
Hi, Susan. Yeah, hello, Dr. Abed, yeah. Alan. Pleasure to meet you. Just wanted to see if you could comment on your financing strategies. I'm certainly interested in the success that you had last year with your securitization transaction, the $180 million. Transaction and wanted to see if that was something that we should expect more of in terms of future funding strategies, kind of lessons learned from that experience since not many organizations have had the success that you've had with that transaction. So,
Thank you.
You want to say
something?
No, go ahead.
I think our microfinance program is one of the largest in the world now. And we need to access resources from the Wall Street type of organizations. So the Citibank, FMO in Holland, KfW, the German arm of the government of Germany, they have now financed or securitized our loans. So basically the securitization, the way it works is that against our portfolio of loans, they give against the collateral, that is a collateral, we get a loan. In other words, we sell our portfolio to them and fresh money is available for relending to somebody else. So that opens up a new avenue for financial for access to finance and to grow. So that's what BRAC is doing. So hopefully we will probably do many more securitization in Bangladesh and hopefully also in Africa in course of time. But you need to have initially some funding already disbursed so that you can securitize that and get extra additional funding. So that's what in Africa we will need that in the future. In Bangladesh we will continue to do that.
Yes. Greetings.
Just one other comment for a second. I forgot what I was talking. Mr. Abed mentioned the School of Public Health. As you know, I'm dean of a School of Public Health here. He has created a school named for Jim Grant, the former head of UNICEF, and is in its third year now. And I think this School of Public Health, which is focused on the needs of people living in rural and urban parts of Bangladesh, is going to be a model for schools of public health throughout the developing world. Rather than basing it on a model of the Western schools of public health, they're really focused on the issues and problems of Bangladesh. Some of us are helping them with that, but I think this school will, within the next few years, be the model with schools of public health throughout the developing world. So it's just another area which I think Mr. Dobbin has done an extraordinary job in getting that going too. Thanks.
Please.
I have an impression that Bangladesh is one of the most competitive markets in microfinance with three of the largest organizations and numerous others, and would be interested in your comments on how that density of microfinance availability affects the market. Is it microfinance available at this point in every village? Are there some places where there's excess competition? How has it driven down prices? And I'd also be interested, I know there's some MFIs that are working to get remittance traffic directly into accounts in the banks and getting into mobile banking. Wondering if you've explored those areas as well. Thank you.
Would you just introduce yourself?
Eric Tucker. I work at an investment management firm, ValueWorks, but I used to work in economic development.
Thank you. No, I think Bangladesh is probably one country where almost everybody have access to financial services. Our last reckoning, it was 19 million borrowers in Bangladesh. So if you look at 145 million people divided by 5 is the number of families. And we have more or less covered all the more than half of the population of Bangladesh in terms of, if you say that more than half of the families in Bangladesh. So that's one area. But I'm sure that there are isolated pockets still not covered. There are some areas which are probably covered by all the agencies, and probably one or two people or a percentage of people have access to resources from more than one agencies, borrowing from Grameen Bank as well as BRAC. This is happening in some cases. But also there are still pockets of villages where they don't have access. So we are now trying to get into those areas, more difficult areas, crossing a river, Ganges River, to go to an isolated village. These are the ones which has not been covered yet. So we are now trying to do that, to cover everybody in Bangladesh with financial services. So we are trying to do that. Now secondly, all kinds of people. I mean, there seems to be, there is a need, there is a missing middle. There are still number of people, entrepreneurs, who could have access to, who needs access to financial services. So small and medium enterprise, I don't think we have done very well yet, and BRAC Bank has now gone into that. But there are not too many players. We are the largest of the banks in terms of financial services to the small entrepreneurs. And I hope that this area will grow and there will be competition among us. Competition also will bring down costs, increase efficiency. So I don't think it's a bad thing at all, competition among organizations which are serving the poor. So I welcome that, and I think it also keeps us in a straight path of cutting down costs and get better efficiency from our work. So I think what is happening in Bangladesh is all for the good of the poor, in the sense that they're getting cheapest possible finance that is available anywhere for the poor.
So what is it that the poor actually pay? What is the pricing now in Bangladesh? And what about the remittances? Is BRAC Bank taking advantage of that?
Yes. At this moment, the what we charge is, we call it a service charge of 12.5% for every 100 taka that we lend. It's a 12.5 taka added, and that is repaid over a year. And remittances, we have Bangladesh's second biggest item of foreign exchange earning is remittance. About $6 billion come from remittance income from our people who have gone abroad to work, and these are coming through the banks now. It used to come through the other channels, which our country did not benefit from. Now it's coming through the banking system. As a result, Bangladesh is getting more foreign exchange. And our bank, BRAC Bank, is the second largest remittance bank. In other words, the top bank, which is a nationalized bank, brings in more money than our bank, but we are number two. So we are getting into an area where in future we will have a lot of resources which could ultimately go into more development activities.
Thanks so much. Thank Esther, please introduce
Hi.
Yourself too.
Esther Dyson. I have one micro question.
Okay.
and then a broader one. When you talked about giving money for 2 years to the poorest of the cow or whatever, to the poorest of the poor, how does that actually work in practice? Is there usually a core of 5 or 6 women together in a village and they work together and support one another? Do you do it to women alone? What, you know, how does this actually work? How many of them do in fact graduate? If you could just describe that process a little more. And then the second question, so I can sit down, is simply, what's the role of mobile phones if you come across them? If you, I'm just curious. Right.
No, the poorest of the poor, I mean, you'll find that if there are 200 families in a village, you'll find about 20, 22 families are what we would call, define as ultra-poor, who are marginalized, who can't feed themselves, they are malnourished, all kinds of problems. Now, these we identify. Identification is a problem in the sense that we involve the village, its village people themselves, identifying the poorest members of their community. Once you have done that, then our staff, we have every 50 families to one staff who are supposed to hold their hand, not really just provide. We've got a portfolio of, let's say, about 20 to 30 different things one could choose from. So the woman chooses what she wants. Does she want to get into vegetable gardening or cow rearing or goat rearing or basket weaving or whatever she wants, or poultry rearing, whatever she wants, she chooses, and then we provide that asset. And then we also try, our staff goes every week to try visit her and find out exactly what is happening, whether she is facing any problem. So it's not a group enterprise, it's an individual enterprise, and they're isolated in the sense that you find one woman here, another half a kilometer away, another woman. So it's difficult to get them together, but they're all busy with their own enterprise, and we support them for 2 years. So 2 years of hand-holding, a little bit of support in terms of asset, getting their children to school, providing them health care and medicine if necessary. Then that, of course, we find 96% of them come out of extreme poverty and graduate on to become a microfinance borrower. So we are quite happy with the results. And as a result, the next tranche of money that we, next phase, we wanted 180 million from donors. They didn't bat an eyelid. They said, all right, we'll fund you, because the program was so successful. Mm. So hopefully we will this phase is also will be successful, and we can then go for a larger program and finish all the poorest people of Bangladesh. But I suppose one can never say that it will be completely out of all ultra-poor of Bangladesh. I think there will still be some people who will just fall behind, and we'll mop them up.
This linkage issue, though, Abed, you know, there's in our country there's a lot of welfare to work programs, and this is taking the food for work, the relief week that has been the dole in Bangladesh, and creating, in essence, a welfare to work kind of program for people who live on about 15 cents a day, or 20, right? It's very little. You said, though, you linked these people to a committee of villagers. We've never had that I know of, any welfare program that's ever thought about actually trying to link poor and disenfranchised to powerful people in their community who would look out for them. How does that part work? Just quickly, and then we'll get your questions.
Well, I think when my Marxist friends didn't like it at all. They said the poorest of the people, and you get all these you know, rich people in the village to help them, it doesn't work. So I said I'd like to see how it works or not. So basically what has happened is that it did work, in the sense that these 5 or 6 or 7 people who formed the committee, they felt that it was their duty to look after the poorest of the poor. And so they were not threatened. Marxist analysis is that there is a conflict between those who own and those who work. And it didn't quite work. In our case, it was an exception, I think. There was no conflict as such that these poorest women were not in any way a threat to the lives and livelihood of the people who were looking after them. So so I thought it worked quite well.
Thank you.
Please,
sir.
Hi, I am Namsak Kim from UNDP. UNDP is trying to launch a new project called Growing Inclusive Markets. And there are a lot of poor people who are not served by the good quality goods and services in a lot of markets. And we are putting together everything regarding the innovations and restrictions and things like that, and develop a toolkit for the profitable and viable business models to include more businesses in the pursuit of a Millennium Development Goal, which is only 8 years away. So, the BRAG has been very impressive to us, and it's very pioneering. And in a sense that in your speech you said you have to go into the dairy business to develop a market for the poor people, and also to the seed multiplying business and so on. There, obviously, there are a lot of untapped markets out there, and clearly there should be a role for other business sectors, and also for the government to develop some infrastructure for you to have a better business, I think. And so my question is, how do you vision you can collaborate your efforts with other business sector or other the government, the role of government?
I think what happens is that once we have gone into the milk business, we found that there was obviously a market failure. There was demand for milk in the towns, the village produced milk, but there was nobody to transport that into the town and sell it. So once BRAC went into it, there are half a dozen other agencies that have now gone into milk marketing. So sometime one has to really show that something could be profitable and get into, so a number of other businessmen come in and get into that kind of business. Mm-hmm. We also had similar problems with iodized salt. Bangladesh used to have most of the salt is not iodized. UNICEF has tried very hard to provide iodine supply to salt manufacturers, but because it's a new process and adds a few cents cost to each kilogram of salt, they wouldn't do it. So BRAC went into salt manufacturing, iodized salt. We said we are going to give iodized salt. Once we have gone into that, and by BRAC's iodized salt trying to corner the market, everybody else has started to put iodine in their salts. So it's like that. So you give a competition to somebody and then they wake up. So that's what we have done in many cases in Bangladesh. We also have a string of shops which sells artisans craft products which is produced in rural Bangladesh but sold in towns. So we provide them good designs. So hopefully in the next few years you'll find them in the New York market too. So we are hoping that basically I think poor people needs marketing support. They can't organize marketing themselves. If you are from Japan, the other day the Japanese ambassador came to see me in my office and he said, why didn't you start your shop in Japan? So I said, I can't start my shops in Japan because we don't have Japanese designers. I need two Japanese designers to develop new products for Japanese markets. Then we can go into Japan and expand. So I think the challenge is to bring poor people's products, market their products globally, link the poor people to the global markets, and then you might find that poverty ultimately, you can reduce poverty substantially.
Abed, Esther's other question was about mobile phones, and I was wondering if you might want to just comment on that and maybe mention BRACnet.
Yes, mobile phone has been very good in Bangladesh. Suddenly, we had less than 1 million phones in Bangladesh, or land phones. Now we have, 10 years later, we have 20 million mobile phones. So everybody has got a mobile phone, even a rickshaw puller, he has a mobile phone nowadays. So it has been a wonderful resource in the sense that I'm sure that it had great impact on productivity in agriculture, in everything, marketing and so on. Mm. So all kinds of productivity increase has happened because of mobile phone. Of course, initially, we were very enamored with the fact that some women were selling mobile phone services to the community. But what has happened over the years now is that everybody has got mobile phones, so there's nothing to sell to anybody anymore. So the women are out of job now, most of them. But anyway, they've been able to provide service for a little while, but now it's no longer a business, it has become a private ownership of mobile phones. They've become so cheap that almost everybody can afford one. And so we have 20 million mobile phones in a population of 145 million. So hopefully there's still some way to go. Probably have 50 million mobile phones in the next 5 years. So it has had a tremendous impact in Bangladesh's productivity and so on.
And BRACNET?
And BRACNET, we are now... BRAC has gone into another project. It's broadband, fast internet service for entire Bangladesh. So we are now trying to cover the entire country. The basic idea is through that we are going to revolutionize primary and secondary education in Bangladesh. So I want to. We are now madly preparing all the lessons for primary and secondary education, taught by the best teachers, so that we can, once we have got the entire country covered with internet service, we can provide in schools multimedia educational service to even the poorest, remotest primary school in Bangladesh. So that's what we'll be hoping that would ultimately improve the quality of education in our country.
Thank you.
What we are looking for.
Please.
Thank you. My name is Summer Brennan. I've worked on various international development projects in Pakistan and also in parts of West Africa. And it's very inspiring to hear about the success of this project in Bangladesh. I'm curious about the applicability internationally of the model. And you mentioned in working in Afghanistan, there were some shifts that had to be made. And I'm just curious whether there are conditions, political or economic, that must exist for this to be successful, or how you see that being translated into other countries, maybe like Pakistan or other areas.
Yes, as I said, I found that most of the work that we do in Bangladesh could be replicated in most other countries. In Pakistan, we have gone in. Only change we have made in Pakistan for microfinance, I can tell you now. We have decided to take all our field workers will be women, because men in Pakistan will not have access to women asking for funds and so on. So all our field workers are women in Pakistan. In Bangladesh, men can have access to women, as you have seen in the picture itself, but in Pakistan that's probably not very appropriate. So therefore we have taken all women. So this kind of minor changes we have made in order to have our program basically effective in different cultures. So we have made some differences for cultural differences, but not that much.
This actually goes along those same lines. My question is, why and how did you decide to work in Tanzania, Uganda, and in Sudan, of all of Africa? I mean, there's a lot of places that this sort of work could have impact, and I just wonder what were the circumstances around choosing that particular area.
We thought we would like to go to East Africa first, so we went into Tanzania, Uganda, Kenya, and Ethiopia first. Ethiopian government said that they'll take 2 years to register us. So we thought that the country which invites us, we'd rather go there first. So we went to Kenya also, was a little more bureaucratic. They said it will take about a year to register you. So we said, all right, wherever we have registration is easy, we'll go there first. So we have gone into Tanzania and Uganda. Southern Sudan we have gone, not because of registration problem, but because it has suffered so much last 30 years. So we felt that even if it takes 2 years to register, we'll go there and try and serve them. So we will be now looking at a number of other countries to go to. It's not the end of Africa for us. It's only 3 countries, and we hope to go to 10 countries at least in the next 5 to 5 years. And our intention is to make a difference in Africa. I think Africa really haven't been served well by its leaders or by donors. And so we would like to make a difference. So whichever country we go to, we'd like to make a difference in terms of income, employment, women's role, reproductive health, mortality, morbidity, all kinds of issues. Mm-hmm. And malaria will be one area that I would like to eradicate completely.
My name is Jennifer Schulte. I'm doing research on the microfinance for the Livelihoods Project of the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children. And my question may be a good follow-on to your question, actually. It concerns, I've been very impressed by the methodology that BRAC uses for working with the ultra-poor and its potential relevance for working with conflict-affected displaced populations. So my question is, to what extent might BRAC consider working with refugee and internally displaced populations in its BRAC Africa programs?
We have just started work in northern Uganda, where there was large numbers of displaced population living in camps. So we went into northern Uganda to start education program first. So these children for the last 10 years have never had any chance of going to school. So we thought that children, once they become adults, it will be very difficult to educate them. So we started 200 schools with the aid of UNICEF. UNICEF wanted us to go there. So we have gone there. So internally displaced people need special kind of intervention with education and healthcare and so on. So we have just started that. And I'm sure that there are many more, particularly in Darfur and so on, there's a lot of internally displaced people. So Africa will provide a great challenge for BRAC. I'm quite certain of that. But I'm sure that we'll also find answers to the problems. Thank you.
Hi, sorry. My name is Kay Hanirani. Excuse me. And I'd just like to make a comment and a question. First, a comment to commend you on what I see as a very deep, complex vision of BRAC, as was mentioned before, to sort of go beyond the sort of bootstrap method of helping people lift themselves up, but understand it's a complex web, the help of elites, the help of creating a market for people. And so that's really visionary, so thank you. my question is, have there been any inquiry made on BRAC's part to see how any of your efforts have affected the push factors of migration and folks leaving their villages to go work in cities and in developing countries, Middle East, so on and so forth? I don't know, has there been any inquiries in how your work has affected that?
Yes, I mean most people, one of the fastest growing city in the world is Dhaka. I don't know whether any of you know, the Dhaka city's population is 12 million. It is going to be the fourth largest city in the world in the next 15 years. By 2020, it's supposed to become the fourth largest city after New York, Mexico City, and Tokyo. So it's going to beat Sao Paulo and Bombay and so on. But anyway, the reason I'm saying that means that we are not being able to keep our people in the villages very much. So despite the fact that we are working hard in the rural Bangladesh, we are still not finding enough, livelihood opportunities for all the people in our villages. And also what has happened is that agriculture used to absorb nearly 70% of the people of Bangladesh. Now it is this transition again happening. It's only 27% of Bangladesh's population is now involved in agriculture, as United States, you'll find that the number of people involved in agriculture is less than 3%. So we are also going to the same level. So agriculture is throwing out a lot of people because of increasing productivity of using machines rather than plows and cows and so draft animals and so on. So all kinds of people are getting out of agriculture. So that's also is pushing people out of rural areas into urban areas. So I hope that our urban areas don't become completely unlivable as it is becoming right now. And I hope that we can keep our people in rural areas effectively employed.
My name is Julia Wei. My question is, I mean, we know you're very successful according to the default rate. Wherever the woman you help them, they always like 90% or
96%, yes.
95%?
96%, yeah.
Okay. So we all know in the world, I mean, if you start a small business, maybe 50% will fail. But how you teach this woman to make sure, ensure they have a successful small business and graduate within 2 years, you must have a tremendous staff, and how do you train them? That's my question. Thank you.
Yes, I mean, we do train our staff quite effectively. We have a...
Especially you go, Naomi, international to each different countries.
Yes.
And each one have a different requirement, different marketing, the competition.
Absolutely.
Right.
So do you know what we do in Africa?
No.
We take students from the university and schools. Mm-hmm. We never take anybody who has previously worked.
Oh, interesting. So they don't have.
We take them right from the beginning.
Flexible.
The first job.
Fresh.
Is black. So
okay.
That the work
mm-hmm.
ethic.
Mm-hmm.
And the culture of black, I want to inculcate right at the beginning. If you're spoilt already, I don't want you.
And what's the black stand for? I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Well,
that.
It started with Bangladesh Rural Advancement Committee.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And this is how. So now that we have gone into Africa, and people ask us, what does BRAC stand for? And if I tell a Tanzanian it's Bangladesh Rural Advancement Committee, he won't be very impressed. So we call. So we say it stands for building resources across communities.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you so much. It's now a minute before 7, so we're going to draw this to a close. I really want to thank the Asia Society. Suzanne DiMaggio, who leads their program for social issues, for being a good partner with the Open Society Institute. Our thanks to them for quickly putting together this program. BRAC USA has two staff people, Rachel Chong, who's magically walking at this moment up the aisle to meet Monica Restrepo, who's here. This is it. This is our team right now. We've just started. This month is our soft launch with Dr. Abed here in town. Last year, Alan hosted a brainstorming session. Would this be a good idea for us to do something? So from brainstorming a year ago to now, we're in the business to help tell the story, mobilize the resources, cultivate the business partnerships, and try to get universities to actually teach the case studies that Harvard and other universities have already written on BRAC and show these wonderful videos. There are videos also that have interviewed from Ashoka that I made, three with Abed, that tell his own life story and the building of BRAC, Innovator for the Poor. He has another one called Thinking Big and Scaling Up, and a third on achieving the Millennium Development Goals. We think that BRAC's learnings should be leveraged. They don't have the answers for everything. They're brand new in Africa. I was in Juba and Arusha and Zanzibar and Dar and Kampala and throughout Uganda looking at what they're doing in Afghanistan in April, because I wasn't sure if, you know, what if Bangladesh is going global and all of that. Sure, I was convinced about BRAC, but could they really do it with the sensitivity and finesse and all? I was convinced after what I saw, their first steps on the ground, this is really worth us backing. Because you know what? This is success of the whole aid and development story. when folks living in one country have the self-confidence and the track record to go try to help work with people in another country and see if they can make a difference, and make a difference, as he says, at a national scale. That's why we want to rally around, and we hope people will help and support this effort. Thanks for coming, everybody.